Show me Moti, you hear me okay? No? Any better? Okay, great. Ta-da. So I had some requests to add a little bit more Hebrew into my talking English. I understand it can be tiring for some. What's easy for me is hard for somebody else. Life isn't fair. We need to be equanimous about that. Life isn't fair. So I want to start with the three images of protection. Protection in life. And all three of them are instead of our walls that we build, that we protect ourselves against difficulty in life. Three of them are, if you like, Lo HaShirion. Okay. The first is the basket, Hasal. And the basket, when the wind blows, the basket is light and just rolls and cannot be destroyed. It just rolls. And it's like the Taoist image of the grass that is bending and cannot break. It can just bend and the wind will come. And so there is a lightness. And we've been talking about that already as a way of protection in the difficulties of life, the challenges of life. Lightness, that we bend or we roll, but we come up whole and undamaged. The second is the glass, zchuchit, where things pass through us, but they don't get stuck on the way. So experiences, we become in a way a channel, tzinor, or glass, zchuchit, shakuf. And experiences come in and out. That's very much a vipassana model. Experiences do come in. We don't shut the door. It's, again, not a shirion, not a barrier, a wall, a choma. But they don't get stuck inside and work there. That we get busy with them. It doesn't turn into a drama. It passes through us. And the third we also talked about already, which is the rock. In the stream of life, to be a rock, to be steady, like the Buddha said, to be an island in the stormy sea. All those three models are really great. We choose which one, and sometimes one, and sometimes the other. They're all of them based on being more open in life and less brittle, pachot shaviri, less breakable. And they're all about finding safety not behind walls or boundaries. But it's in a gradual process so that we gradually replace shirion with the other ways of protection, which are less visible, less obvious. They're invisible, they're inside, but they still protect us. Equanimity is a protection. It's not making us more vulnerable, it's making us less vulnerable. based on a process, you could say, of being more open to life and less of a self-center. So all of them, in a way, are based on anatta, less selfing. And that's why at the very beginning of this retreat, I talked about anatta as one of the places where we grow. From the very first time we meditate, we grow into a place of less self-importance, less self-centered, less me, 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 less closed into what I need, what I think, what I have to be, what not, what good for me, not good for me, I like, I don't like. All of that heat, which the Buddha called fire of self, all the time gets less. Equanimity needs that. But it's there right from the beginning. Every time we a little bit let go of the center called me, 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 and open ourselves to the breath, to the body, to the trees, to the food, to each other, to the community, we're already in that stream of less shirion. So one of the, titles of one of my talks was, "We Can't Be Hurt If We Can't Be Found." which I like it because it's kind of, it makes you think. We can't be hurt if we can't be found. And this is based on the story, a very famous story that many of you will have heard because I say it every retreat on equanimity. But I'll say it again anyway, because it's the number one story of equanimity. It comes from Zen, and it's about a passenger that goes to wants to cross a river, and he found a boat with a boatman, and he asks the boatman, "Will you take me across?" The boatman said, "Okay, I will." So he gets in the boat, and the boatman starts to row the boat. And in the middle of the river, another boat comes and smashes into it, hits it, nitka. And the boatman starts to swear and curse. "Look where you're going, you stupid people. You just bumped into my boat. You did damage." And he's shouting. They went on a bit, and another boat hit this one. And the boatman didn't say anything. The other boat had no people in it. It was just a boat floating down. The boatman didn't say anything. So the passenger said, "What? Why didn't you shout at this boat? It also did damage." And the boatman said, "Well, there's nobody to shout at." And for us, that's an important story. The more empty we are, there's nobody to shout at. There's nobody to shout at. And it's not that we have to go for 50 years of Dharma practice to become totally empty before that works. Just think of the last time someone was angry with you. Okay? Or someone, you experienced elbon, an insult. And just imagine that event that happened and how a little bit of being able to be less defensive, haganatiyut or tuguvatiyut, a little bit would make a big difference. You can receive the anger. You can allow the anger. It doesn't destroy you, because there's less me there that has to work to defend myself. So when there's less shirion, there's less me, there's less busyness keeping keeping the Shirion, repairing it all the time, fixing it all the time. Hard work. Being a self is hard work. We have to keep Tikkun Shel HaShirion Kol HaZman. Tachzuka. I was thinking about it some time back when I was in Nahariya, and there were two guys that very suddenly and spontaneously started to scream at each other, and I thought, in any minute, they're going to pull out a knife and kill each other. And I just, they were there like between, they were there close, and I just went in between. And I didn't think about it. I thought, am I crazy? Afterwards, I thought, but I said, I just went in between them and turned to the one and turned to the other. Do you need this, actually? Do you need this? Somehow, the whole thing collapsed. Finished anger. But I thought about it afterwards that if I'd been full of self, I would have not at all, wouldn't have dreamt of such a stupid thing. But if you think about anger of someone else directed at you, how possible it is if you are not, you don't feel there is a self that needs to defend itself. The anger doesn't work. It doesn't have a result. I gave a talk today on Zoom in a conference on aging, on Hizdaknut and consciousness. I suddenly remembered, and I told the story, that there's a sutta, there's a text about the Buddha when he was old, and he was getting a massage, Isui, Mi Ananda, that was his helper. And the story is that Ananda and the Buddha, who was already old person, Ananda was giving him massage and saying, look at your flesh, it's all dried up. I called me Yavesh. And the Buddha laughed and said, yes, look at that. How funny, my flesh is all dried up. And Ananda said, look at your skin. It's all hanging dry and loose, wrinkles, because they're kmatim. And the Buddha said, yes, it's so funny, look at this. No self there. It's just change. Aging is change. That was my talk. Aging is change. Change happens all the time. Can we be, instead of locked in a model of the way things should be or not be, can we be more empty? And then what happens? Even aging is pliya, is amazement. Wow, like that story of the Buddha. Wow, look at my skin. It's all wrinkled. It's just pliya. You look at change as pliya, as amazement. Wow, look at that. Isn't that amazing? You got a choice. You have to do that or you cry. One or the other. So you better choose. But who wants to choose worry? You know, who wants to choose worry? Instead, when you can choose amazement and delight at change. There was a very nice text which gives something about the power of equanimity. And it's a text which is important to all of us living in this country, where it doesn't take 5 minutes before someone wants to argue with you about politics. And someone asked the Buddha, how do you deal with an argument with somebody. And the Buddha said, well, if you're arguing with somebody and they don't have very strong opinions, the view is not the same as yours, a different view, but they don't have strong opinions. And they don't have strong emotions. So it's easy. If they have a strong emotion but not strong view, or strong view but not strong emotion, then it's not easy, but it's possible. It's tiring, but you can do it. But if you have, but if they have strong emotion and strong view, forget it. Don't argue. That comes from the Buddha. Means most of us will shut up. Most of the we just don't travel on trains and buses and to go down the street. But the bottom line of this text is: never underestimate the power of equanimity. So here maybe I do need the Hebrew. How do you say never underestimate? Lo lehamit be'erech. Shel equanimity. Upeka. Because it's a power. How is it a power? Because it expresses something different. Steadiness works in life. And many of you ask, and this is in a way the subject for my talk this evening, many of you asked, how does it work in life? Isn't it passive? If I just accept everything, then I just stay at home and be miserable? How do I go out from equanimity? With equanimity. And here is one example. You can influence the world with equanimity. I gave the example of Nelson Mandela in the group today, how he changed a whole country. But there was something about him which was really equanimous, really steady and quiet. And he changed the whole country. Instead of being hysterical and dramatic, and equanimity works as something that you can lashader, to spread to the world. I remember in sometimes in dialogues we used to do in Shul Zahav with Israelis and Palestinians, or Israelis and Israelis doing groups of people who are in conflict. And one time I was there and there was a huge shouting going on between in the group, and I just didn't know what to do, so I just sat there quietly in the middle, just like the text of the Buddha. I just sat there and was quiet. After a few minutes, the shouting stopped, and I said to the facilitator with me, I'm sorry, I couldn't hold this. It blew up. And this other facilitator, who was a Palestinian woman, said, no, you did really well. You sat in the middle, quietly on your chair, and it settled everybody. It took 5 minutes, but if you hadn't been there, they would have been fighting, you know, the whole day. Your equanimity, your quietness stopped it. Well, I didn't notice. I just thought I failed. I didn't hold it, but she pointed out equanimity sometimes is a subtle tool where other tools don't work. It influences things. I use it when my grandchildren fighting each other. Stay in the middle and be quiet and see. You know, radiate le shader equanimity. Doesn't work all the time. It's not a there's no guarantee, but so there was a question I got today. When there is this, when there's equanimity, then do difficult experiences get inside the same way? Do they go in? And if you think about what I just said about Elbon, for example, it would be true that the Elbon can get in there to us, but if we're more empty, it doesn't work. We'll feel, maybe, we might feel in the body, for example, pain, the energy of someone aggressive, anger. We feel it because we're sensitive. So we can feel energies, we can feel the anger of somebody. We can feel the pain, like the Buddha. We can feel the pain of the world. We can feel the pain. Who doesn't feel the pain? Pain of others. We feel pain all the time. It's not that we don't feel the pain. But they don't stick. They don't work. We can laugh and then we can cry. Like I saw the Dalai Lama one time in a video, he was crying because of something that someone said. And then 2 minutes later, he was laughing like a child. And crying and laughing, it's like there was no shiriot. There was no, it didn't make dramas. It didn't build anything. So we do, equanimity doesn't stop these things coming in, but they come and they go, a bit like the glass, like I said, or the basket. And after a while, they do get less. We don't give them so much intensity. The intensity of them, of those voices, that those pain does get less. And I want to quote another quote from Etty Hillersham, and she's, you know, as you heard yesterday, she has beautiful touching experiences in her journal. But one thing she wrote that touched me, she said that we react against suffering and sadness, and we want to put it away. But sadness, and she was in a place of a lot of sadness, a lot of pain, but she said, the sadness is calling us. And if we listen to the call of the sadness and give it its space, the space that it's asking for, we're suddenly back in the stream of life again. And that's a very beautiful phrase. We're back in life. Give sadness, which is a painful emotion that generally we don't want, sadness, suffering, but give it the space that it asks for, and we're back in the flow of life. So it's, we feel these, but we don't build things out of them as much. We don't build judgments. It doesn't, to use Eastern language, they don't make karmic tracks, ekvot karmi. They don't leave traces, karmic traces. They come in and out, and so we don't hold them and build from them, and then relate to the world from them, and give everybody else a hard time, which is what happens, the hashlachot. We our pain we usually build and then we throw it on other people. And so we will get less, slowly, because we don't give them authority on us, samchut aleinu. And what's important, what's important is something else grows in the place of the pain that we don't allow or don't give all that busyness with it or drama, but something else happens. We have more joy, we have more openness, we have more inner peace. It allows something to grow in the space. It's not that we have empty space, that's like the schuchit, that we are nothing and experiences pass through us and we're empty. What happens is if we don't build story and karma out of these experiences because of it more equanimous, then there's space for joy and there's space for, like Etty Hillesum said, we're back in the flow of life. If we don't give let the pain dominate us, control us, we're back in the flow of life. We give it space, we give it attention, but it doesn't dominate our world. Last night, I mentioned in the meditation that equanimity or a sense of balance allows us to love. And here, equanimity is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Viharas, the Brahma Viharas means the celestial, the God dwellings, penthouses in the sky. and that's, as I said, metta, love, karuna, compassion, chemla, mudita, joy, and upekka, equanimity. They're the four. And all of the four of them are movements of the heart. And their character, their quality, is that they are unconditioned or they're unlimited. You can't put love in a box. You can't measure love. You can't measure these Brahma Viharas. They're called immeasurable. They're not loniten limdod. That's their nature, traditionally, and also our experience. You can't measure love. But love or compassion also can be hard for us. It can take us away. We can feel lost. We can feel disturbed. We can feel like, oh, you know, too much. It's like the heart can just be crazy with any of these. Falling in love, the heart should be crazy. If we fall in love properly, then the heart does go crazy. And we need to. But metta should be, in a way, something that isn't, that is more steady, that is more total, that is flowing all the time. Kindness and love just being natural part of our life. For that, it needs some steadiness. It needs to have ground. And so love needs to have a ground so that it doesn't knock us down, take us away, sweep us away. So upekka, the equanimity, is the balancing of the four Brahma Viharas. And its character, again, is of non-self or is existential. The existential view, hamabat kiyumi yoter, hamabat universali yoter. Equanimity is that big view that we've been talking about the whole retreat in different ways. And again, if we have that view that is bigger than me and my needs and my interests and my shirion, if we have that bigger view, then we can receive more pain. The Buddha, as a bodhisattva, means a being that is ready to receive pain and awaken others. Bodhisattva, you can say in English, an awakener. You can translate it as awakener. Someone that's dedicated to awaken others. And he can take a lot of pain because of equanimity, because he or she comes from existential place. And it can take more love. And the love is different. And all of the Brahma Viharas, for example, how much we kind of, our love is dependent. I love only if I am loved back. Or I'm loved only if there's no hurt. Or I am loved, or I love only if you do what I say, then I love you. It's dependent, but upekkha, the equanimity, really helps that, to kind of have a bigger view of love, which is less dependent on me and on the other. It sounds a bit big, all of this. Everything I've said, the existential view, the non-self, the empty boat, that we can't be hurt because if we're empty, but it sounds a bit big. Meanwhile, we do have a shirion. Meanwhile, we're in the process. And in a way, we need external walls. We need a shirion until we don't, if you see what I mean. Then time will need a shirion of some kind, and then eventually we don't need it anymore. So one of the most common questions that comes up is, but surely I do need boundaries. If I don't have boundaries, how can I live with people? And it's right. But here we have something that's important to understand. It's really fine to have boundaries. It's really okay to have boundaries if we know that we need them and how much we need them and understand them and be aware of them and not have more boundaries just because of habit. Like relationships, we say, I can't take this, and I can't take that, and I can't take that, and we have boundaries. And we can build more boundaries or less. Boundaries, when we need them, we have them, we need them. Sometimes in our life, we really do need boundaries, because we can't, even in this practice, in a retreat, in our spiritual life, we need a boundary and to say to ourselves, I'm not going there. I'm sorry, I'm not going to touch that pain. That pain is too big. I won't bring it into the meditation hall here. I was talking to the staff the other night about that I had one person I was teaching who was above 70, And he said in the group, there's one part of my, I can bring everything into my meditation practice, my awareness, and into this group, everything. There's no difficulty and pain that I can't work with, except one. And this is not coming here into this group. And he showed his arm, and there was a number. So he has a child. He was in the concentration camp in the Shoah. That is out. And all you can say is yes. So sometimes we really need to know this knot. I'm not going there. I'm not dealing with that one. I don't have enough mindfulness and awareness to touch that pain or that issue. It's fine. Really okay. Slowly, slowly we can touch everything, but we need respect, not to try and bring the whole lot all in one go. We need respect for ourselves. And that sometimes means, yes, have boundary, but know that there is a bound, that the boundary is a boundary, and slowly, slowly we can undo it and replace it with equanimity. So here is where we need to know the difference between equanimity, as hishtavut nefesh, hishtavut, and shivyon nefesh. Because shivyon nefesh is a little bit like adishut. And in English, interestingly, I just thought about it today, equanimity versus indifference. In English, the word for adishut is indifference. And now, I didn't think about it, but today I looked at the word and I realized indifference means no difference. In means no. So it's no difference. And no difference means everything is neutral. And it's like, it's not equanimity. Shivyon is not, or indifference, is not equanimity. It's shutting down, where it doesn't touch. It's all the same. I'm not going to touch pain and pleasure. I keep it out. And that's adishut. And there is we should know what it feels like. Adishut is, it's very close to equanimity. It's close to it, but it's also far. And Netta reminded us the other night that it's the near enemy of equanimity. It's called the near enemy, which is a Dharma language for it looks like it, but it's not. It's more problematic. Like the near enemy of chemla is rachamim. So the near enemy of equanimity is adishut. Close, but actually quite far also. Again, sometimes we need it to keep out things we're not ready for. It's fine. Sometimes we need that. We need to shut the door. It's really all right. Sometimes people say, I blame myself because I see too many movies, or I go to pubs, or I don't know. I say, yeah, go. Have fun. Don't try and be too Buddhist. Sometimes we need to be human beings. Adishut in English, indifference is also, the expression is not getting wet. You like a duck, kumo barvaz, goes into the water, but it comes out dry. So that's adishut. We don't get wet. So we need it sometimes, but slowly, slowly we change adishut to equanimity, where we do get wet, but it doesn't destroy us, it doesn't undo us, we don't turn it into dramas, and we don't build it, and it passes through us, it's there and it's gone. And then we're ready for the next pliya. I thought about it the other day, actually not this year, but last year. We have lots of wild pigs in Klil, Chazirei Bar. And generally, they can be a bit scary because they're the size, sometimes the Godel shel Chamor. They're huge. At night, and you hear them going. And usually, I kind of go out at night and I hear them around, and they run away, and I do make a noise and they run, and I work on myself not to be afraid. I do inner work. I say, I'm going anyway. I'm just going. But I remember one night, I was in the middle of Klil somewhere in an orchard. It was totally dark. And there was a craziness around. There was loads and loads of pigs, all going, you know, everywhere. And loads of dogs, all barking at the pigs. And they were all running in circles, the dogs and the pigs, in a craziness like I've never seen in my life. No. So, Adi Shud, so, I'm not going there. And I turned around and went back, even though it meant half an hour walk around the whole Klil. I said, I can't. I watched it inside me, and I thought, what is this? This is definitely, I'm giving in to fear, or is it wisdom? And I kind of got the sense that it's too much for me. I don't want to go there. It's like, you know, Adi Shut is sometimes needed. But sometimes we should know it. We should allow it. We should. That it has its place. There are many, many places, and I won't go into it. It's a very big issue. There are many, many places of trauma and difficulty and pain that we can experience that are not easily dealt with, that are not even right for this meditation hall, that we do need to know how to work with them. We do need some boundaries and some sense of how to work with them slowly and respectfully and using the right tools, and not to jump straight at, I should be equanimous. So it's worth knowing that. So the other question that's come up a lot is, if I accept things as they are, if I allow things to be the way they are, I've shared with him liot kamo shehem, makabel devarim kamo, like in the quote here ekabel et hadavarim kamo shehem. Like I said, I'm not too happy with the word lekabel, but never mind. Then how do we act? Lekabel et hakol means what? Stay at home and do nothing, because everything is okay as it is. Hakol beseder kamo shehem. Kamo shehakol, as a lo tzrich lasot shum davar. Lo tzrich lashanot shum davar. Meifo? How? Ezi motivatsia? Lashanot dvarim im hem beseder gamur. So that's a valid question. And it's very, how do we make choices? If I'm sick, I should just die? Because everything is wonderful, so I don't need to go to the hospital. The Buddha had a doctor, by the way. It does get like that if you have a belief in, too strong belief in karma. And I've seen it in India, I've spent years in India. And sometimes people take belief, which is not what we're doing here. We're not busy with belief here. We're busy with practice, with seeing, with experience. But if you take karma as a very strong belief, it can lead to passivity. And yes, people accept fate sometimes. Zekol gorali, zekol biyadayim shel Elohim, lo se klum, lo tzarich lasot klum, zelamala, zekol milamala. That's a belief system which can be toxic and paralyzed. Mashatek otanu. That's not what we're talking about. But we should be aware that in the Western culture where we live, it's exactly the opposite. Which is, I have to control everything, I have to fix everything, I have to make sure everything is better, I'm dropping. And it's based on something very, very deep in Western culture, which is so deep that we don't notice it. But if we go to the, I don't know what, American Indians or the Aborigines or in India, people will tell you that the Western culture has forgotten what it is to be contented. Tzviut ratzon. The Western culture is built on chaser, on lack, on pain, on restlessness, on unhappiness. We have to shop until we drop because we are basically unhappy just sitting at home or just watching the trees. So there's a deep unhappiness in Western culture which is created the opposite, which is endless restless activity. And more and more and more and more, which we're destroying the planet because of that. Shakespeare said, better is the enemy of the good. So Western culture is all about better. Catastrophe if the economy doesn't grow. Panic everywhere. So we've gone too far and it catches us and we become part of it. It's our culture. So looking at how equanimity can help us to act in the world and make change. How does it work? Well, the first thing is, it's not acceptance. It's a lo Kabbalah kolkach. Because Kabbalah is, in a way, pressure to accept. It has in it some pressure. I have to accept. Ani chayav lekabel. I tzedek. Ani chayav lekabel. That's acceptance. And we get pressure to accept the unacceptable. But it's absolutely all right to say, this is unacceptable. I'm not. Ani lo mekabel. Kabbalah regila, lo. One of my first teachers, John Coleman, who died, but he had on his door a sign saying, the Dharma is about confrontation. But not conflict. Confrontation is challenging, meeting, but not conflict. So the place, we can replace the word acceptance with the word radical acceptance, which is Tara Brach's description. And radical acceptance is not just simple acceptance, it's deeper than that. It's about our capacity to meet things as they are, meaning to meet them, to allow them to be what they are as a source of action. So instead of automatically trying to fix them, we allow them to be the way they are as a kind of invitation to action. Because the opposite is avoidance, resistance, violence, helplessness, confusion, many states of mind that are not helpful, that are all about avoiding and not meeting things the way they are. So meeting things the way they are gives everything permission, issue, to be the way it is. And that is an invitation to act, because we act when we meet things as they are. We need to look the shedim, or the chazirei ba, we need to look them in the eyes. L'stakel b'shedim b'gova enayim. Then we know who you are. If there's a disease in the body, meet it. Not the first thing, shut it up, avoid it, or cut it out in the hospital. We meet it. And that's the road to healing, is to listen to the body. But we can't listen if we don't know who you are. If we can't listen to the voice. If we can't hear a voice, then we can't do anything. So actually the hearing is going out too, is being with, it's being for. I'm for you, I'm listening to you. Like a mother is listening to a child, and the child maybe can't speak because the child is too young. But the mother goes to the child listening and say, I need to understand what you're saying. Not shutting up and shutting the door. At least most, I hope, mothers don't. But going to the child and listening deeply and meeting the child and looking in the eyes and then acting. And so that equanimity really helps us. It's our ability to dance with the change. Lirkod im nesibot, rather than run away or avoid or cover them. Very often we will make change in life from that place of meeting, and people don't know that we're making change because we're equanimous and we're not against people. Let me explain this. Usually people say they expect opposition, right? So they want, you have an argument with somebody and they expect you to convince them to be left wing, or to be right wing, or whatever it is, for example, or to be this, or to be that. There's an expectation, that's the way change is made, you, the shachner, to persuade. With equanimity, you go to the person and find the language by going to, through equanimity, not opposing, not fighting, not saying you're a monster, but going, meeting, being for, like relating to that person, like a mother relating to a child, and going to the person, and you can make a change without the person realizing it, because you're joining their language, you're looking, listening to them. And sometimes it's hard because someone is thinking totally the opposite, but you go into their world, and if you go into their world, sometimes you can make change. I remember talking about this with one of my daughters, about how if there's a child that's smoking grass and so on, as a parent, what do? And sometimes you need to smoke grass as a parent. You join them and smoke grass with them. Share their language. Go and join. I don't mean every time, but just to be there, and then change can happen from another place. You're not the one above trying to fix them, but you're with them. And that's equanimity lets you do that. So it's a power. Equanimity is a power. It's not being passive, oh, everything's the same, so I don't need to do anything. It's a power like a great ship that is big and steady and cutting through the water through being, you know, quiet and steady and big. It's close to compassion. Equanimity and compassion are very, very close. Equanimity in the heart goes to compassion as soon as we feel the pain of others or ourselves. It goes there very easily. When we see doors open, we go through them. And a final word. If we come out of that sense that the world is a problem that I have to fix and I have to control, then we're in another place. Not of passivity or paralysis she took, but we offer ourselves to the world as dana. We become dana. We offer our life to the world just like we got it from the world. We offer it back. And that's not control, it's not fixing, it's not pressure, it's not fighting, it's not resisting, or it's offering from another place. And then the world does with that, with what it wants, because equanimity is not about control. So we offer ourselves to the world, and then the world does what it wants. Okay, so we've done it. We've done what we can. We go home. And it's a different attitude. We offer what we can to the world, and we let the world do after that what it wants, instead of the obsession with fixing and controlling, and which is based on our pain, on our non-happiness. So from a happy place, we choose action, we choose what to do, we offer ourselves, and then go home and sleep well. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes, quiet.